Say begin your landscaping project now at Menards. We make it easy for you to enhance your outdoor living space with the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block, ready to take home today. Build a fire pit or retaining wall with our tumbled Belgian wall blocks. On sale now. Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to Every Other Tuesday.
Med crimes. It is happening.
Here we are. I had
the July GI bug is very real. Devin had it. Kate had it. And y'all better wash your damn hands is all I got to say.
And your fruit.
And your feet. Wash everything.
Not your foot, your fruit, you ding dong.
No, I heard what you said and I added feet. But yes, wash your fruit and maybe lay off the out of a bag salad for a minute or something.
That's your favorite.
That's my favorite.
You love a good out-of-the-bag salad.
I actually really do. They make some good ones.
I know.
They're just dangerous. They're always getting recalled, and I'm like, bring on the fucking bacteria. I love it.
You have a good gut.
I do. I have apparently not so. I do now. Yesterday, my gut was not so great. So we're recording a little later than I love, but here we are. We've dragged ourselves out of the pit so that we could be here for you guys. So you're welcome.
Can't miss it every other Tuesday. We know how much you guys beat us up.
I know it. We have some Patreons.
Gosh, I love a good Patreon.
Same. We have Maddie. Hi, Maddie.
Hi, Maddie.
Love a one-name wonder. Hi, Maddie. And we have Amanda Shelton. Hi, Amanda. Welcome.
Yo, yo.
Y'all are baddies. And I have a critter for you. Do you want to know your creature? You are...
Is it a parasite? I'm just kidding.
Wow.
I'm kidding. No. So you can see where my mind's at. Wow.
It's way more metal than that.
Yeah,
so you guys are the Spearfinger. And the Spearfinger is a malevolent folk witch of Cherokee legends. And it disguises itself as an old woman and then uses an obsidian razor-sharp fingernail to pierce her victims and steal their livers.
Shazam.
So, I mean, Shazam is right. That's
it's making
y'all
me
are.
Think. Steals the livers and not the spleens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Wrong organ, baby. Wrong organ. So, yeah, that's what you guys are, the Spearfinger. So welcome, Maddie and Amanda. Thank you so much. We really
Thank
appreciate
you.
You guys.
Welcome to the family.
Yes. And we got a two-pata because I still, after all these years,
folks,
don't know how to be brief. I don't know.
She cannot. She's just, you know, you get every last detail. I must
give you all that I have. I must, because I love a good detail and I want to throw them up at you into your ears as you listen to this. So you're welcome for that. Today we are going to talk about Dr. Buck Ruxton, who we've had quite a few requests on this guy. And it's somewhat old-timey, not real old-timey, but it was sort of back mid-century in the 1900s. And so, you know, we're going to take it back just a little bit. And he was responsible for what later became known as the Jigsaw Murders. So he's also been called Dr. Jigsaw in the media when all of this happened and when it came out. And the really fascinating part about this case is the forensics that was used back in the day to find this guy and convict this guy, because this was really like when, I mean, there was no DNA, there was none of that. It was really just good old fashioned police work. And it was actually the first case in which things like newspaper dates and really, really decent investigative work, and specifically forensic entomology. This was the first time entomology, or like the science behind bug and insect development, was used to solve a murder. So that was really interesting to
me. I am intrigued.
I know. There are some trigger warnings here. We have trigger warnings for domestic violence, mental illness in crisis, and suicide. And it's the domestic violence here that is just very classical cycle of abuse. It's awful. It's ridiculous. But it is something that so many people out there can really identify with and resonate with. So if that severe sort of domestic abuse situation is triggering for you, this might very well not be the episode. It gets very, very upsetting. So just be aware going into it.
I'm a little nervous.
You'll be all right, Devin. Suck it up. I say suck it up to Devin, but nobody else. Nobody else has to suck it up.
Everyone else, you all have choices. I do not.
Devin does not have a choice. So Buck Ruxton, who was not known as Buck
Ruxton. I'm going to just say this right now. Every time you say his name, I'm going to think of Teddy Ruxpin. That's immediately what's coming to my mind.
Okay, you do that.
I'm letting you know, this is what the thought I have, and now I'm sure the story is going to paralyze my memory of good old Teddy.
Probably, yeah. This is really not in that wheelhouse even a little bit. Yeah. So Buck was born to a wealthy, middle-class Indian family in 1899, and his birth name was Bukhtiar Chompa Rastomji Ratanji Hakim. So if I butchered that, anybody of Indian origin, I greatly apologize, but I did my best and I did look it up. So you're welcome.
Wow.
So very, very long name. He was born into, you know, this middle class family, but he was pushed to excel from a very, very early age, specifically in school. And he knew pretty early on that he wanted to be in science or medicine. And by 1922, at the age of 23, Buck Hakim earned a bachelor's degree in medicine and surgery from Grant Medical College in the city then known as Bombay, which now the city is known as Mumbai. So he spent 1 year after he got his degree working at the Bombay Hospital. Then he was promptly commissioned into the Indian Medical Service as a medical officer, which is like part of the Indian military. And at the time, India was still a part of the British Empire. And that meant that because Buck held a professional degree, he had the military clearance that allowed him to work in hospitals in both India and England. So he chose to stay in India initially. And when you're around that age and you're done with schooling in India, it's you get married. That's what your family sort of asks of you. And they were urging him to settle down and get married. And because that's customary at that stage in your life.
And that's a big culture of arranged marriages, too.
Oh, yes. Right? And he was no exception to that. So
I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you do, baby. And in May of 1925, at 26 years old, Buck did enter into an arranged marriage, but it was very brief. See, they know how to be brief. I don't know how to be brief. I wish I had a little brevity in my life. Buck knows how to be brief. That's the only thing he's got going for him, is he knows how to be brief. Now, 6 months after he got married, Buck was actually assigned to work at a hospital in Baghdad, Iraq, and he picked up and he left his wife, not really giving her any indication if or when he would ever be back. And he, in fact, never did return.
How nice of him.
I know. Sweet guy. So
she might have gone with you.
I mean, but he didn't even ask is the thing. He was just like, I got to go. I'll be back or not. And she was like, the fuck? And he just never came back. So this is the type of, this is the shenanigans, though, that he pulls throughout his entire life. And he spent 1 year in Iraq, and he pursued a new life for himself after the 1 year he spent in Iraq. He ended up picking up and moving to England, as his credentials allowed him to do, instead of returning to Bombay. And it wasn't super clear what motivated that decision in the moment to go to England instead of back to India. We think, you know, either he wanted to attend more schooling because there was more schooling available in England at the time, or maybe he just wanted to escape his arranged marriage and the pressures from his family. We're not quite sure. But those are, you know, some of the theories that are out there. He did end up attending medical school at London's University College Hospital for 1 year. And then he ended up moving to Edinburgh to study for the entrance exam for the Fellowship of the Royal College of Surgeons. So lots of school names I'm throwing around out there.
Lots of formal names.
Lot of big names. Yep. Now, the statistics, the exact statistics, I should say, for the 1927 entrance exam are not known. But in the 1890s, we know that the pass rate was just 48% of applicants. And Buck was not among that 48%, give or take. So these high failure rates, especially with like licensing exams in the 1920s, might reflect that the standards of medical school and admission at the time were kind of lackadaisical. Now, today, less than 10% of applicants are admitted into medical schools after taking their MCAT or medical college admission test. And this might explain why acceptance rates into specialized medical programs have increased since Buck's day. But Buck did have one potential handicap in his ability to pass these specialty exams, because it is known that these were taken in a different country. This was not his first language. You know, he didn't speak English as a first language, so that obviously is a struggle for him. And he didn't pass that licensing exam, but he was still able to practice general medicine in the UK. And that was the next step that he took. So shortly after he began work as a doctor in England, Buck went on to meet 26-year-old Isabella Kerr. And at the time, the young woman was working as a manager at Fairley's restaurant. And though Buck never even really officially divorced his wife back in India, he immediately fell head over heels for this woman. Aww. He was absolutely in love with her. And from the start, they shared a very passionate, like, mutual attraction. It was like instant electricity, fireworks, like love at first sight type of situation. And Buck really wanted to lock this shit down. So in 1928, he ended up telegraphing his family, asking for his... Get this. The fucking audacity of this guy.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
So in 1928, he telegraphs his family in Bombay. By his family, I mean his in-laws. He sends a letter to his in-laws asking his first wife's father to send him £200.
The first wife?
Yeah.
Hi, I abandoned your daughter. Can I borrow some money?
We don't know why, but somehow this man did send Buck the money. And I think maybe because Buck probably inferred that it was like a situation where, like, I'll eventually come home, like, but I need this money in order to do that. So can you send it to me? And then he just like took the money and ran. Uh-huh. So that same year, Buck and Isabella moved to London together. And in London, Buck ended up working as a locum tenens. So a locum tenens or a locum doctor is somebody who does the work of a physician when the physician is away or the healthcare facility is like understaffed or short staffed. And it's actually a really sweet gig because being a locum in a hospital setting, it's a really nice lifestyle because you can essentially make your own schedule and you have no long-term patient responsibilities. So you're not like following people in primary care for years and years. It's like your responsibilities to the patient sort of end when your shift ends, and they are paid very well for their temporary work. So it's sort of like a traveling nurse, if you will. So they don't take like, I mean, you can take like a contract or an assignment and they go where they're needed acutely, like sort of like a temporary worker. And you get all that schedule flexibility. You can kind of make your own hours. And it's commonly these days more like a 1099 or a contract position. Uh-huh. But it's a really nice gig for a lot of people. And it wasn't long after that that he decided to change his name. And it was in April of 1929 that Buck legally changed his name to Buck Ruxton. And he did this because it was more Western sounding, more American sounding, and more modern sounding. And it kind of separated him from his nationality a little bit, which is awful to say, but I think it's the reality. And he was known to sort of have idolized the opulence of Western culture. And his wife, it was documented, his actual wife in India actually did try to reach him several times with letters and telegraphs, but Buck never answered and she never received a response. So he kind of had absolutely left her behind.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Despiértate, que el $4 breakfast meal deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un sausage McMuffin o sausage biscuit, hash brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
And Buck and Isabella continued their relationship in London, and they ended up being together that so long that they became common law husband and wife. And shortly after that, they promptly had their first child, a daughter. And meanwhile, Buck's very brief medical work in England had given him enough experience to start his own practice. And it was in the spring of 1930 that 31-year-old Buck Ruxton moved his wife Isabella and their new daughter Elizabeth to home at 2 Dalton Square, and that was in Lancaster, Northern England. And that is where he would also set up his in-home medical practice. So, like all businesses, you know, Buck's practice took some time to ramp up. And Buck and Isabella did struggle a little bit initially in this transition period to sort of make ends meet. Isabella was sometimes seen in, like, the shabbier clothes, like things that had been really well worn and well loved over the years. And it was kind of a source of contention for Buck because he is very heavily about appearances and reputation and status. And so
Buck,
when his wife was walking around not in the newest and shiniest, it like bothered him to his core because he did not want his family to be perceived as anything other than like wealthy.
Right.
So eventually, you know, as his practice picked up a little bit and business improved, she was able to afford some finer clothes, but Buck's pride sort of never really desisted. And in his relationship with Isabella, we're going to see that this relationship just takes an incredibly volatile turn, and that this woman's entire community, her family, police, friends, they did nothing or little to nothing to help her. And it is so sad to see how this unfolded in a number of ways. And we know that, you know, some of it was the time and, you know, some of it was definitely the time of the time period. And, you know,
well,
unfortunately,
you honor your husband, you know,
you do.
You're endowed to him and all, you know, all.
Yeah. And I think that was a lot of it. And
the wife is slave to the husband. And
yeah. So unfortunately,
those are not my beliefs.
Those are not. Yeah. We do not endorse that. But we do know the reality is that in some parts of the world, that is even still today a thing.
Right.
So in 1930, 31-year-old Dr. Buck Ruxton's life was improving. You know, from the outside looking in, people saw this like respectable middle to upper class family. And he was a guy who was like slowly amassing this very positive reputation and this improving financial status. And to some degree, you know, he felt like finally, like this is the time of my life that I'm going to like step out and like really enjoy myself. But he would regularly resent those that had more than him. Like if he saw somebody who had a better life or had something that he wanted, he would just It would make him very agitated and belligerent. He was incredibly narcissistic, and any mention of flaws or any even constructive criticism would get him very agitated and upset. He was so concerned with having his life that he had built, like, looked down upon, that he saw every minor convenience as, like, a threat to his growing empire. So, unfortunately, his ruthless pursuit of a lavish life heavily impacted his relationship with Isabella. And Buck had these fits of severe, intense jealousy. And I'm going to preface this by saying that it is widely surmised that Buck had a lot of features of a untreated mental illness. And it's very sad because this man probably did need help that was just not available to people at the time.
Well, they probably didn't know what,
it just didn't exist. It didn't exist.
Couldn't identify it, yeah.
Exactly. That it just, the right thing for him didn't exist. And, you know, his life and would have been a lot better maybe if he was born at a different time or in a different area, you know. But he would have these fits of jealousy, and he would instigate these very volatile arguments. And at times, Buck would go so far as to berate Isabella for being unfaithful. And he made this allegation constantly, and he had zero proof. There was nothing that would indicate that to, like, a normal person, but it was a delusion that he had that would wax and wane throughout their entire relationship. And it was a huge source of contention between the two. And Buck kept up pretenses in his professional life during all of the volatility in his relationship. His practice gained regular clients, and many of his patients regarded him as this, like, brilliant, charming, elegant, methodical guy. Uh-huh. And people said, you know, he could treat arthritis and rheumatism. And there were so many positive testimonials about him, and he was able to amass some wealth. And so things, you know, again, are looking up for him professionally, at least. And the success and the absence of financial difficulties did sort of ease things at home for a period of time. And before long, he and his wife were expecting a second child. And at that point was when Buck started putting any extra money that he had towards a live-in nurse by the name of Mary Rogerson. And she helped Isabella for their growing family. And when their second daughter, Diane, was born, she was very actively involved in that. Unfortunately, parenting a newborn, of course, you know, cultivated some new aggravations and tensions between Buck and Isabella. You know,
can't that, imagine why at
I know.
All.
Everybody I'm thinks shocked. So. You know, we'll just have a baby to fix all our relationship problems. No, no. It just highlights
no
them and makes them bold and and italic and exclamation points after
it's
them.
A
and
big, it beautiful life.
Makes them very intense, guys. Don't have babies to fix relationships, please. And back before long, they were just back at those same intense arguments. He would be accusing her of cheating and of being unfaithful, and he would call her these terrible, berating names. And sometimes things started to turn violent, and Buck's nature started becoming more and more extreme. And this became a very recurring theme. This was this big cycle that lasted for years. And we see now, because it's a known thing that abusers will do to their victims. They will have, you know, periods where they love bomb and suck you back in when you're threatening to leave. And then, you know, once things calm down a little bit, something else happens. And it's
but
even worse.
You.
It's even worse than the last time. And it's a vicious cycle that is, it can be impossible to escape.
But I love you.
Yet for all this issue, Jesus.
I'm love bombing you.
Thank you. I will love bomb you and nothing else for the rest of your life. So it was widely reported by several witnesses that were privy to these issues that when Buck had these episodes of becoming irate and belligerent, his speech would, which he already spoke very fast, but his speech would become almost unintelligible and at times even incoherent. Like he would start saying things that really don't make any sense. And if you call him out on him, what did you just say? I can't even understand it. You're not even making any sense.
What? Who?
Yes. He would just escalate and escalate and escalate and start making even more absurd claims that didn't even make any sense and were completely outlandish. And he would hyperfixate on these frequent allegations against his wife of her being unfaithful. And he grew convinced that Isabella was having an affair. Again, there was never any evidence of this. And again, experts are later surmising that Buck, given what we know now about mental health disorders, the general consensus is that we think he likely suffered from bipolar disorder or something similar. People who inflict this jealous violence generally exhibit other characteristics related to mood disorders that stem from dopamine imbalances, like bipolar disorder. And given Buck's extreme fluctuations between anger and happiness and his violent tendencies, his issues with impulse control, it's likely that he suffered from some form of bipolar disorder. It's also commonly associated with narcissism, a lack of accountability, a high risk-taking behavior, all of which Buck seemed to demonstrate in to some degree, at least.
Right.
And in this setting, that would explain these episodes. Either way, in 1932, you know, there was really no great treatment for this, unfortunately.
We didn't even know what it was.
No, we didn't. And 2 years after they had had their second daughter, Isabella became pregnant again. And unfortunately, she suffered a miscarriage. And the sudden loss, coupled with their already very tumultuous relationship, led Isabella into a severe depression. And unfortunately, that same year, Isabella attempted suicide.
Oh, gosh.
She lived. And yet rather than expressing empathy for his wife, Buck just got angry. He just got pissed. Because, of course, you know, if it gets out that his wife tried to... So no concern for her well-being. He was mostly just, like, concerned about what this would do to their reputation and their standing in the community.
What would it look like?
Yeah, exactly.
What are the people going to say?
Yes. Now, Isabella has a sister named Jeannie. And he...
Jeannie!
Buck reached out to Jeannie and insisted that she talk some sense into Isabella. And Jeannie outright asked Buck, did you have something to do with Isabella wanting to die by suicide? And Buck said, nope, nothing to do with me. As far as I'm concerned, I am a perfectly loving husband. And whatever she did is on her and not me even a little bit. Because, again, he's a narcissistic prick and he doesn't think he can do any wrong. And he's, you know, just the shiny golden penny. So he said, you know, my wife is the problem. It's not me. So he then said, in fact, Isabella tried to kill herself in an attempt to hurt me. This was all an attempt to hurt me. It's all about me. You were trying to screw me over by trying to hurt yourself.
Wow.
Because I can do nothing wrong. Like, that's how ridiculous this man is. No concern.
Slap him.
This guy's awful.
He sucks.
He does. He went on to tell Jeannie that Isabella had threatened to kill herself before in attempts to destroy Buck's reputation and his medical practice. Despite this, he did everything in his power to be good to her. Okay, you're beating her up, but okay, like, whatever.
Sure, yeah.
And his growing...
I was good to you.
Oh, yeah, okay. Buck's growing anger and defensiveness told an entirely different story, but Jeannie was also really intimidated by Buck. So she said, you know, I'm not going to argue with this guy. I feel like something's off. Obviously, something's weird here. And Buck had gotten increasingly... He was starting to get agitated as he's starting to tell Jeannie, you know, his side of the events. And he even prevented her from going upstairs to see her sister initially. Eventually, he relents, and he, once he spoke his piece, he kind of was like, he calmed down, and he permitted Jeannie to go see Isabella. And Jeannie went to see her sister upstairs. Buck didn't seem to care about Isabella really in general, especially like when she was recovering from her suicide attempt. He really did not care, you know, to help her with anything. He demanded that Isabella tell her sister, quote, the truth about what happened. And it was then that Isabella clarified to Jeannie, I wasn't actually trying to kill myself. It was an accident. So that is sort of the story that she went with from here on out. We don't actually know if this is true or not. We don't really know exactly if she tried to intentionally hurt herself or if this was an accident. We don't honestly know. In either case, you know, Buck felt like, well, then you lied to me. And he flew into this other frickin' rage. And right in front of her sister, he slaps Isabella across the face.
Oh, my gosh.
This is why I'm telling you, this is awful. Like, this is brutal. And Buck yelled in her face, reportedly. He said, come on now, the truth. You have to tell the truth. And Isabella got really distraught, understandably, and asked Jeannie if she could stay at Jeannie's house. And Jeannie lived in Edinburgh. And Buck, like, freaked out at the prospect of his wife leaving the house. And he, like, exploded into tears. And he started threatening her and saying, well, if you leave and take the kids, I'm going to slit their throats, is what he said. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. Yep. This guy's a fucking winner, you guys. A winner.
I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm. So by this point, Jeannie is like, okay, it is very clear that you are in a relationship with, like, a very dangerous man. Mm-hmm. And at the time, somehow, Buck was able to flip things and calm down. And then he said, okay, you know what? Maybe we do need some distance. You go stay with your sister for a few days. I'm going to stay at the house. You know, we'll figure this out. He said, you know what? For the evening, if you want, Jeannie can spend the night here because she's from Edinburgh. She doesn't have a place to stay. She's got to stay here. And then tomorrow, I will bring you both to the train station. And he kept his word. He did this.
I was going to say, are we sure? Because I was waiting for a crock of shit.
Yeah, no, he did it. And after a brief stay with her sister, Isabella did return home. And for some months, life was actually decent. Once again, the cycle begins. And in 1933, Isabella becomes pregnant again.
Oh, man.
She soon delivers a third Ruxton child named Billy. And still, throughout this entire time period, Buck is regularly abusing Isabella. According to one of their maids, in November of 1933, Isabella Ruxton came down to the kitchen crying and clutching her badly bruised left arm. At lunch that day, she told Buck that she was leaving. She said, I can't do this anymore. I'm leaving. He said to her, no, you will not go away. And he started spreading it around that Isabella is an unfit mother, that she is unfit to care for her own children, hoping that others would encourage her to stop trying to leave and to stay with Buck. And just months later, there was another incident. Now, in April 1934, Isabella went to the police station where she made a statement to Detective Inspector William Thompson about the violence in her home. And while she was there, Buck showed up in a frenzied state. And they would go on to describe, the cops would later go on to describe that he was waving his arms, that he was literally spitting and foaming at the mouth. He was shrieking, my wife has been unfaithful. She's cheating on me. If it continues, I'm going to kill her. Like, clearly making threats on her life. And this is not the first time he's threatened the life of her or one of her kids.
Wow.
And he was talking very fast and hysterically, as he always did when he had these episodes. He leaped from subject to subject. He was incoherent at times. He was saying his wife is trying to sabotage my medical practice and then claiming it's all a ploy just to hurt me. And he had this, like, very warped, you know, sense of their relationship.
Yeah, I want to punch this guy in the face.
It's crazy. He's obviously in some kind of mental health crisis, and it is not an excuse for treating people the way that he treated his wife and the people in his life. But it's just such a sad story all around for many different reasons, because he obviously is a asshole and he needed a lot of help that just was not available at this time.
Right.
So he was unable to like really comprehend that his wife was unhappy because of him. He was like, that's not a possibility. You know, I am a perfectly loving husband. I do everything I can to make you happy. He was not even a little bit willing to consider the possibility that he is causing his wife's unhappiness when like, yes, sir, that is what it is. And he's just casting all of the blame on her. The cops are trying to calm Buck down. And they later remembered that they were like medically worried about him. He was so worked up. They were like, is this man going to like have a seizure or pass out? Like, this is how unhinged this man was. And then they recalled that subsequently he just calmed down like he had in the past. It was like a switch flipped.
It's good.
Everything's good. It's like without any apparent change in circumstance, nothing had changed. But Buck just it's like a switch flipped. And Detective Inspector Thompson asked Buck if he'd give Isabella money for a train fare to go see her sister in Edinburgh. And he did. He said, go ahead. Here's some money. You go get on the train and go to your sister's. And Thompson accompanied Isabella back to the Ruxton residence so that she could pack her clothes without getting hurt. And Buck, at this time, even though he told her to go, wasn't quite ready to, you know, let her go, actually. She was grabbing her things. Buck passed her a note. And soon the couple spoke privately. Like, she left the room and went to talk out, you know, away from the police officer. Mm-hmm. And Buck must have had something very persuasive to say, because after the two talked, Isabella came back in the room and said, you know what? I've actually decided to stay. I'm not going to go see my sister. And it was like, again, you know, these sharp conflicts are followed by this honeymoon phase of makeup. And then, you know, and Buck is like, you know, bombing Isabella with all this love, only to have this whole cycle repeat itself over and over and over again. And it wasn't healthy, but they both continued to pursue this relationship and the abuse just continued. And at a later date, Police Constable William Wilson answers a telephone call from 2 Dalton Square, and it was Isabella begging for help. When he arrived at the scene, he found the doctor behaving like a man insane. Isabella was terrified, and she was watching as her husband just ranted and threw things and swung his arms. And Buck was screaming again about his wife's supposed affair. At one point, Buck cried, and he screamed, "I will commit 2 murders in Dalton Square tonight." He said that.
Come on.
Saying, like, I'm going to commit 2 murders in this house.
What?
So, despite all of this, despite everything her sister had witnessed, despite the multiple police officers that had witnessed Buck's behavior and heard him directly threaten her life on multiple occasions, no one really did anything further to help her. And in 1934, Isabella tried to finally help herself. She left. She got her things when Buck was out of the house, and she fled to her sister Jeannie's house in Edinburgh with all of her clothes and her kids, telling her, "I have finally left Lancaster and I am not going back." Now, back in Lancaster, Buck was outraged, obviously. He asked the housemaid, Mary Rogerson, if she would be the mother of his children from that point on. So the nurse that he had hired to help care for the kids, and it was also like sort of a makeshift nanny, he said, can you be the mom of my kids now?
Sure,
my wife
why
is gone.
Not?
Jesus.
Why not?
He then promptly
I just
left
need
for
someone on my side.
I know. He then promptly left for Edinburgh in pursuit of getting his wife back. And he arrived on Jeannie's doorstep in Edinburgh, and he demanded that Isabella return to Lancaster with him. And he said, "It would ruin me if she leaves for good," is what he said. And that I need my kids. Your kid, like, we all just need to be together as a unit. After lots of time spent begging and pleading, Isabella relented on the condition that she stay with Jeannie for several days to get her bearings, gather her things, and that he give her a little bit more time, but she would return. Buck told Isabella, "No, you got to come back. You got to come back." So she compromised. She said, "You know what? What about one more night? Give me one more night just to get my bearings, to think about things, to pack my things, and I will return tomorrow." He said, "Okay, fine." And she did. But of course, the cycle continues. And by the end of 1934, Isabella called the domestic servant Eliza Hunter into the kitchen from the backyard. This is horrifying. Eliza found Buck with his hands around his wife's neck. And Buck stepped away as soon as he noticed that Eliza was watching. Buck steps away and he starts denying Isabella's claims that he had just had a knife to her throat. But Eliza actually recalled hearing a switchblade click shut, and she noticed in his hand that he was like tucking something silver and shiny like into his sleeve, like he obviously was trying to conceal, like he was hiding something. And she's like, I call bullshit. Buck didn't, he wasn't quite quick enough. And while this was a really awful scenario to walk in on, and while it was horrifying, it worried Eliza, but she said nothing to the couple or anyone else. I get it, because being a domestic servant in the 1930s is a really tough life, and the possibility of losing her position would have meant she would be ruined and might not find another job.
And honestly, she's seeing this guy who's clearly violent right in front of her.
Unhinged,
you know what
right?
I mean? So yes. She's probably fearing for herself as well.
But like, this woman's life, like you can clearly mm-hmm. see that this woman's life is in danger. This is yet another moment.
What year is this?
1934.
Yeah.
34, yeah. 35. So like, I get it. You know, she doesn't want to become destitute and on the street because, mm-hmm. you know, she lost her job for reporting her boss. But also
it's her word against his in some
retrospect. A powerful guy.
Exactly.
Yes.
She's a servant. Exactly.
Like I said, I do get it. There's a lot of layers there.
At that time, there was no, mm-hmm. you know, Me Too movement. There was
yes.
no like me. It
was
all
none
about
of that.
Status and who you knew.
It's all it was back then. And in early 1935, Eliza heard Isabella calling her from the bedroom. And when Eliza went in, she found Isabella on the bed where Buck was holding her down with his hands around her neck. And he jumped up when he saw Eliza come in, and then he shouted that this is none of her business and get out. Why are you in here? Get out. And a few months later, same thing happened. Though this time, it was a different servant, Vera Shelton, who answered Isabella's call from her bedroom. And when Vera entered, Buck ran from the room calling Isabella a prostitute as he left.
What?
Yeah. Yep. This is this guy, okay? He's... Again, he can do no wrong. Everything is Isabella's fault.
Right.
So this servant or maid or what have you found Isabella's nightdress torn. Her arms were bruised and a broken telephone was on the floor. But Isabella was alive, thankfully. But over and over and over again, multiple members of the household, the staff in the household, witnessed these moments, and there were so many opportunities for someone, anyone, just to do something or say something, and nobody helped this woman. She is actively reaching out for help. She is calling for maids to help her when Buck is attacking her. She is calling the police and going to the police station asking for help, and I want to scream at this,
right,
that no
right.
one is helping this person. Uh-huh. And in September of 1935, Isabella had planned to stay at the Adelphi Hotel in Inabara with some friends. And among some friends were Mr. and Mrs. Edmondson. They were just family friends that they had known for years, and their daughter, Barbara, and their son, Robert. And they all worked at the town clerk's office. And Buck took that to assume immediately that Isabella is having an affair with Robert. Oh, you're socializing with a man, which means you're fucking him. No, honey, no. Buck ended up following the Edmondsons for a while, hoping to catch him and his wife in the act. And he ended up putting a brown paper screen of some kind over his windshield so that they wouldn't be able to see him through the windshield of the car.
This doesn't look suspicious.
No, dude, look in the mirror. You've got a fucking problem, sir. But obviously, Buck didn't see anything suspicious because there was nothing going on.
This is delusional.
So he decides to stick around the hotel that evening and he continues his covert mission. And that night, he waits in the car outside the Adelphi Hotel. And though he had no evidence, he was convinced that Isabella and Robert were spending the night together. And in reality, Isabella, Barbara, and Robert all had their own separate rooms. Nobody spent the night with anybody. Everybody had their own damn room. And the next day, Buck waited anxiously for Isabella to return from her trip. And when she did, he put on that nothing was wrong. He said, actually, he was very upset, but he was holding it in.
Right.
For him, Isabella's trip had been the final straw.
Oh, shit. Oh!
I know.
I'm getting scared.
He, you know, over the next week, he grew more and more violent with each passing day. And by the next weekend, Isabella found herself, again, wanting to leave because of the abuse. On Saturday, September 14th, 1 week after the Edinburgh trip, Isabella drove to Blackpool, which was a seaside resort town, to meet her sisters. And every year, the sisters went together to see the annual illuminations, which lit the city up in these like beautiful colors. But Isabella seemed very withdrawn and upset and just not herself. Her sisters noticed. And though the three women were among a group of friends, Isabella found herself kind of sad, especially when she was left alone. And her sisters really noticed this, like, dude, something is very different. And later that same evening, Isabella ended up confessing to Jeannie, who was there with her other sisters, that she was once again preparing to leave her husband, and that's why she was so upset. She'd apparently made inquiries about managing a football pool in Edinburgh, but she still hadn't much to plan before she left Buck. And for Jeannie, the news was a relief. And at 11:30 p.m., Isabella seemed like she was in better spirits after they kind of talked it through. And she said some goodbyes and she drove back to Lancaster, promising her sister, "I will return the following day."
Oh, shit.
But Buck was waiting up for her.
Just by that sentence, I know what happened.
Mm-hmm. Buck was waiting up for her when she got home. And in the early wee hours of the morning on Sunday, September 15th, Isabella pulled up to 2 Dalton Square, where Buck had left food for her in the lounge. And it was like a big feast, actually. He left her like cake and fruit and a whole bunch of stuff, some champagne. The investigation that followed suggests that what happened next was that a violent quarrel broke out between Isabella and Buck. And that the two likely had a very physical altercation that had them ending up at the top of the stairs outside their bedrooms, like sort of on a landing area. And like the times before, Buck was quick to put his hands on his wife. And with his bare hands, he strangled Isabella to death. Now, strangulation, I just want to make a note to say, is a very disturbing method of murder. And it's always really disturbed me because
I can't even.
It's not like it looks in movies and TV. It's very, very different because, you know, you see like books, you know, books, movies, TV. It's like 30 seconds of holding, of like doing this and like someone's dead. That's actually not true at all. It takes immense strength and consistent, extremely firm pressure for at least 3 to 4 minutes. Because usually when people initially lose consciousness from strangulation, it's because they're passing out from lack of oxygen. They're not dead yet.
Right.
The death happens from increasing cerebral pressure.
You gotta keep it up. Yeah.
Yes, you have to occlude the blood vessels or collapse the trachea. And that takes a ton of pressure and strength. And it's terrifying. The rage behind it is really scary. But
nightmares.
Isabella was not the only victim that night. It is estimated that during that time, their live-in nurse, remember Mary Rogerson, found Isabella and Buck in their quarrel. And Buck, you know, perhaps she tried to save Isabella or intervene, or maybe she was just a witness. We don't actually know. But once he finished killing his wife, Buck then picked up something heavy and hit Mary Rogerson over the head with such force that it broke her skull. And Then, according to the investigative reports that came back after the fact, Buck then stabbed Mary many times.
Oh my gosh.
Now, once the fighting was over, Buck then drags the bodies into he and his wife's bedroom. And this was all to kind of get into the next phase of his plan. Mm-hmm. All while in Blackpool, Isabella Ruxton's sisters waited for her arrival, and she would never arrive. And that is where I'm going to stop for part one.
This is a manic son of a bitch. He is a manic, angry, disturbed human being.
Yes, he is. It is incredibly...
And it's terrifying.
Alarming. Honestly, though, even though this was a long time ago, that same cycle of abuse applies to so many people around the world.
It sure does now. It's just a little bit more aware now.
Exactly.
So when you're thinking of it almost 100 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, where
exactly.
there was lack of awareness, but also even if you were aware, the changes in the social times that we've had, you know what I mean? Where men mm-hmm. and women were not equal.
Now, if this cycle of abuse sounds all too familiar to you or like about you or maybe somebody that you care about, you know, there is a lot out there that can be done and there is help. Like there is a way out.
There are things to do now. There are hotlines.
Yes.
There are people that will help you.
Honey, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline or even text them or even chat with them online. You can call 800-799-7233 and they will get you the fuck out of there. They will get you you need. Call Devin.
Call me.
Devin and I will fucking ride at dawn, bitches.
Done.
We'd ride at dawn. Mount your velociraptors. We ride at dawn. We are going to fucking come extract you.
Mm-hmm.
So just know, please know that you're not alone. There are things that can be done. There's a lot of resources out there. Just reach out, you know, reach out. So this is just a really sad case for a lot of reasons, like I said. And it's just so upsetting. It's so upsetting. The violence was so unnecessary. So unnecessary. And this woman tried and tried and tried to get help, and she just never could quite get what she needed.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, Kate. You always find a way to bring me down.
I love to bum you out.
You can, if you want to feel doomed or anything, you can continue to find us by searching for us on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube at Med Crimes Podcast.
You could check us out on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you want to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast.
You can send us any crazy stories, emails, suggestions at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Stay safe out there. There's help out there. Like, please, you know,
call the hotline.
Don't let this be your reality.
Awful. It's awful.
It's the worst. Be safe out there.
Wash your hands.
Yes.
And your fruit.
That too. And your feet.
And your lettuce. Bye.